Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, April 17, 2024. Freedom House is urging global action to end the one-year-long conflict in Sudan.
And that is why it is crucial, all the peace effort and transition effort, all the effort to control the violence in Sudan requires a strong action against the regional spoilers.
And youth unemployment poses a significant challenge to thousands of university graduates in South Sudan.
We need to support our families, we need to support our children, and we can support our government. So my message has to go direct to the government and even those NGOs, let them care our boys. They have to come and help us so that they will see how women will progress.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A year since war broke out in Sudan, analysts foresee no end to the conflict and say the longer it drags on, the more likely Sudan will become a breeding ground for terrorist groups. VOA spoke via video to a volunteer at one of the last functioning hospitals in Omdurman. Henry Wilkins has this report.
From day one of Sudan's war a year ago, fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces has ravaged Sudan's twin cities of Khartoum, its capital, and Omdurman, its largest. Millions have fled the metropolitan area because of the fighting. Some have stayed, however, either because they don't have the means to leave, or in a few cases, because they chose to stay and help. Momin Ahmed Abbas volunteers at one of Omdurman's last functional hospitals and refuses to flee the city. Speaking to VOA via video call, Abbas says he cannot abandon his patients, especially when they rely on his support. He stays to ensure they have access to essentials like food, shelter, and medical care. His leaving, he says, would only exacerbate the situation for those in need. He says the situation is desperate at the hospital, which lacks medical supplies and security, and is vulnerable to frequent airstrikes and fighting. Humanitarian groups and international journalists have found entry into Khartoum and many other parts of Sudan all but impossible. And as a result, the world's awareness of the country's troubles has diminished. Commentators and diplomats often refer to Sudan's conflict as the world's forgotten war, despite as many as 16,000 people estimated to have died because of the conflict and 8.6 million forcibly displaced. Analysts say pressure from the international community is needed to bring the warring sides to the negotiating table. But one doesn't see that happening anytime soon. Cameron Hudson is a senior fellow in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Sadly, I don't see this conflict as particularly ripe for any kind of resolution right now. Both sides think either that they can win or they have to win. And as long as they continue to be sustained by external actors, providing them weapons and intelligence, then they're going to continue this fight.
A recent U.S. intelligence report says the longer the war drags on, the more likely Sudan will become a breeding ground for terrorists. One analyst who spoke to VOA echoed this view. Bakary El-Medni is a Sudanese-born associate professor at Long Island University, who has written for numerous publications and been frequently quoted on Sudanese politics.
You got young people, and they have all the fuel. They have the anger, they have the ethnic division, and then they have whatever is the narrative about there is a just war happening somewhere.
Leaders of both warring sides are wildly unpopular among most Sudanese. Neither has ever been democratically elected. Yet Sudanese civilians are the ones bearing the brunt of the ongoing fighting. Abbas says Sudan needs external help and intervention. Yet, after 1 year of fighting in Sudan, it seems clear that no substantial help is on its way. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Still on Sudan, as the country marks 1 year of conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces this week, Freedom House is urging global action on the conflict, emphasizing the need to address violence, displacement, and human rights abuses. The nonprofit organization is calling on the United States and the European Union to pressure regional actors fueling the violence, impose sanctions on the warring factions, and engage pro-democracy groups in peace talks aimed at resolving the conflict. I spoke with Freedom House Africa Senior Regional Advisor Ghaskandi Abdushafi.
The Sudan war started in April 15, 2023. And at that time, there was a lot of global effort to be able to negotiate a roadmap for a democratic transition and to undo the military coup that was done by the junta under the leadership of Karim Blagrand, which is General Burhan, the president and the chair of the National Sovereignty Council, and his second in command, Ahmed Hamdan Dogolo, the commander of the Rapid Support Forces. And in April, there was a sort of consensus among civilian forces for a negotiated agreement that has been in dialogue for almost a year. In the brink of that agreement, the conflict broke out between two commanders. And I think the main reason was that the most conversation and dialogue was focused on an agreement between the civilian actors who are looking for civilian-led democratic governance and the military who want to keep power in some way or other. But the real problem was within the military camp that is being missed out, and that was exploded in a war between the army and their paramilitary in Khartoum that immediately broke into the military barracks across the country and the main cities. The war completely destroyed the country. This has become more difficult and different war than other civil wars in Africa because this war started in the city and it is still fought within the cities and urban center, starting from Khartoum. And that makes it very difficult and induces mass displacement because of the heavy urbanization and new and urban population in the Sudan. But it also paralyzes all state systems, which make it very difficult for the service sector, for instance, communication, transport. So it paralyzes all the service system in the country and induces mass displacement and suffering.
And in light of this overview, Freedom House is calling for action, calling on the United States and the European Union to get more involved and to take action. And just you mentioned that these two generals turn on each other and they're destroying the country. But you're also calling on the U.S. and the European Union to pressure their regional backers, people who are backing them in the region. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, it is very difficult to reach out to any peace agreement when you have arms flowing and you have an entire state that spares their budget, their policy with international mercenary that provides the cloak of legitimacy to war criminals in Sudan. And within this regard, it's particularly the Freedom House and with our monitoring, with our partners, we see how heavy influence that the UAE has to arrest supplying arms, ammunition, but also engaging through other, you know, international malicious actors such as Wagner to be able to foil the war, particularly through the Darfur and the UN reports, including the reports of New York Times, shows how that support is coming and arm flow from Umjeras in Chad directly to Darfur. We also saw the Egypt's very negative role it plays since the beginning of the negotiation before the war breakdown, where it's tried to harbor the former regime's actors that include the notorious leader of the notorious National Intelligence and Security Service, that is exfiltrated in Cairo, creating counter alliance against the civilian peace coalition, peaceful transition coalitions, but also now supporting with drones to Sudan through importation of the drone from Turkish. And that is where it is crucial, all the peace effort and transition effort, all the effort to control the violence in Sudan requires a strong action against the regionalist spoilers.
And beside these regional actors, and we have seen these UN reports and other investigative reports that point the fingers to the United Arab Emirates for supporting the rapid support forces and to Egypt for supporting the army. And recently, even Iran has been introduced to the mix. But something else you mentioned in your statement, which is the necessity to involve pro-democracy groups and actors in any peace negotiations, like women, youth. What is the importance of involving pro-democracy actors?
The main purpose of this war, which in any way benefits the armed actors, is to pressure Sudanese people to forget about non-violent peaceful movement, to forget about the Sudanese civilians' question for democratic transition, and talk about security sector problems. Who will have big guns and somebody who have a more ability to kill more people has most likely to be the sovereign man. And I think any peace negotiation and conversation with this both belligerent, which is still publicly acknowledged that they are seeking a democratic transition, that is why it's very important any peace negotiation or any conversation that those voices, which are the key talking and the only future for Sudan, to be part of every conversation.
That's Gaskandi Abdushafi, Freedom House Africa Senior Regional Advisor. He spoke with me from Washington this past hour. U.S. Representative Jim McGovern joined a rally on Monday to urge action on Sudan as the war between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces crossed the one-year mark. He spoke with VOA Swahili Service reporter Huba Abdi at the rally.
I'm here to basically stand in solidarity with these human rights organizations and these and Sudanese nationals who are here, who are so sick and tired of the violence and the starvation of the Sudanese people. The Sudanese people have suffered too much, and we are here to send a message to those responsible for this, for these human rights violations, and that is we're not going to forget, and we're going to hold you accountable. And to those countries that are supporting, you know, those who are causing this violence, you know, we're going to fight to make sure that you are sanctioned. This is horrific, what is happening, and it needs to come to an end.
One of the placards is written that President Biden, Sudan can't wait. What is the message about this?
Well, President Biden is a special envoy to Sudan. We want to encourage him, you know, to come with recommendations to the United States Congress about holding, you know, not only those in Sudan who are responsible for the violence, but the countries that are supporting, you know, the militaries and the generals that are causing this violence. It is a stain on the world community's reputation and commitment to human rights that this has gone on for so long. We need more than words now. We need actions.
Do you think Sudan has been forgotten?
I think Sudan, unfortunately, has kind of fallen off the headlines, and we are here today to make sure that it gets back in the headlines, that it is not forgotten. You know, the world is a difficult place. What's happening in Gaza right now, you know, breaks our hearts. What's happening in Ukraine breaks our hearts. But our hearts should also be broken by what is happening in Sudan, and we need to do more.
That's U.S. Representative Jim McGovern speaking with VOA's Huba Abdi during a Monday rally in Washington, D.C., marking the one-year anniversary of the conflict in Sudan. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we speak to South Sudanese fleeing the violence in Sudan. Stay tuned.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
And our proverb for today is from Arua, Uganda.
I'm called Jafar Bashir from Arua, Uganda. There's a proverb says in our language of Lugwara, says it means a cow which cries too much doesn't have milk.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some South Sudanese returnees from Sudan say the conflict there has destroyed their property and livelihoods. Many say they feel helpless about being able to resettle and educate their children the way they did in Sudan. Some returnees are calling for support with funds to start new lives. Mamer Abraham Court reports for VOA from Malakal.
A year ago, the conflict in Sudan broke out between the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces. The United Nations says the war has claimed as many as 15,000 lives. Many South Sudanese who lived in Sudan have fled home to escape the fighting. Some now are experiencing dire conditions without a place to live or a job. 46-year-old Stella Lomako is traveling to Juba from the Blukat Transit Center in Malakal. She worked as a housemaid in Khartoum before the war. Lomako says her husband died, so she must take care of their four children on her own. Tearing up, Lomako says she cannot predict how a life will be in Juba after losing everything because of the conflict.
We were living a good life in Khartoum with my children. My husband died. I was the one responsible for them. I was working, but the situation became difficult when the war started. Life is now very difficult. The children are sick. I am also sick. And I do not have money. I spent 20 years in Khartoum now. I am going to Juba to my uncle's house. My uncle died, but his wife is still alive.
Lomako says her goal was to get her children out of a war zone, but as a result, her older daughter had to interrupt her university education.
My first daughter is 20 years old. The boy has 18 years old, another one 15, and the last born has 13 years. My firstborn daughter was remaining with 1 year to finish university. They studied in Arabic, but now they're going to Juba. Maybe it will be difficult because schools are in English in Juba. I do not know anyone to help me with the education of my children.
45-year-old Angelina Anthony, a mother of seven, is traveling to Wau from Blukat Transit Center in Malakal, but she says she does not know anyone in Wau. Anthony went to Khartoum when she was a young girl. She says the conflict forced her to leave behind nearly all her belongings when she fled, including her children's clothes in Khartoum.
The war in Sudan affected me badly. My husband died in 2005, and I have seven children. Two children finished university education, and I was working as a house help in Khartoum to earn money to feed my children. I was working part-time as a house help and part-time in a factory. Now I am going to Wau, and I do not know anyone there. When the war started, I was in Omdurman, and I did not know I would reach here because I had nothing. But God opened for us the door to come back to rain.
54-year-old Mojud Ibrahim, a father of five who hails from Ye in Central Equatorial State, says he is glad to come back home. He appreciates the help he has gotten from Rank to Bulukat Transit Center in Malakal. Ibrahim says he lost the small business he ran in Khartoum because of the fighting. Ibrahim says He is eager to start a new life back in South Sudan. He says most of the returnees are vulnerable and need support.
I am very optimistic now to go home and to start a new life because I am working in the market. But I need some help and some support like microfinance and something like that. We have our own house in Yuba. No problem for housing now. The problem is how to get some finance so as to start new work there. Organization can support us through some projects of livelihood to support us with finance and something like that so as we can start our new life there. The returnees are needy people.
Mai Kong, chairperson of a task force for receiving returnees at Blue Card Transit Center, advises South Sudanese coming home not to sit back when they find a place to settle.
Wherever you reach has your final destination or your home area. Government of South Sudan now become having peace. There's no anything that can forbid anyone from doing his own activities. Anything that related to human lives need hard work.
He urges partner organizations across the country to give the returnees all the support they need to reintegrate into communities. Since the conflict began, South Sudanese have returned in large numbers through the support of the International Organization for Migration, South Sudan's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, and other groups. The United Nations Refugee Agency says at least 1.8 million have fled Sudan to other countries, and about 640,000 of them have gone to South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwad, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
South Sudanese women in a Juba suburb have established a local savings group called Sanduk Sanduk, which helps their families cope with the country's ailing economy. Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
In the Juba suburb of Gurei, a group of women are supporting each other during tough times with their savings initiative. Meling Mary Moga operates a shop in Gudele Market. She says her savings group has helped her boost her business.
This is Sondu Sondu. It's really very nice to have us. Like me personally, when we have started by then, I have nothing completely. But when we open the first year, and then I begin to do my business. I open a small boutique where I do sell children clothes. Some of my members, all of them, they're in a market. I was very happy because the situation where we're in, it is a very hard situation.
Emma George says with help from the savings initiative, she's able to manage a kiosk at her home and can pay her children's school fees.
I have a small business in my house in the door there. I sell the maggi, sweets, that thing. Then if I find something little, then I rush here and then I save it. Because if I save it at home, the problem comes. The children here, we need, then I waste that money, and then I cannot continue with my business. Then the business collapse. That is why we come here, and then we make groups, and then we save like we are saving in the bank. That is how we help, and it is really helping.
Doris Elizai has a family of six. She says women's savings group changed her life. She hawks water along the streets and in Gudele Market to earn money for her family.
Sometimes I give to 2,000 or 3,000 SSP, depending on how much I was able to earn of the week. I'll come and give here. If I want a loan, I come and I tell them that I need a loan depending on the amount that I need. I'll take the money, then I return with interest. If you take 5,000, you return 6,000 SSP. 10,000, you return 12,000 SSP. The interest is just very small. For sure, our group is helping. If you are in the group and want money, they will surely give you to work and return.
Salma Isaac quarries stones for a living in Gurei, and her savings group helped her get a loan so she could open a dobi or laundry to supplement her income.
If the stones are bought, then on Saturday, I will deposit my savings. If the money is not enough, I do wash clothes for extra pay. We are tired. There is nothing, no food, no water, and the water is now 3,500 SSP. If the stones are not crushed, the children won't study, and the only way is for the children to study. That's why I opened Adobe.
Meling wants the government and aid groups to help women go beyond the savings. They build at the local level and support and strengthen women's ability to create businesses.
We need to support our families, we need to support our children, and we can support our government. So my message has to go direct to the government and even those NGOs, let them hear our voice. They have to come and help us so that they will see how women will progress.
The local savings initiative began last year with four groups, each with 30 women. Every Saturday, the women meet under a tree named Yenet, which means hope. The pooled money is kept in a big metal box, sealed with three big padlocks. Three different members keep the keys for safety. Members of the group save at least 2,000 South Sudanese pounds every Saturday. Members then can take out short-term loans at a manageable interest rate. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonye reporting from Juba.
More than 20 African nations have loosened restrictions on abortion in recent years. But experts say many women likely do not realize they are entitled to a legal abortion. VOA's Carol Bandami speaks with Evelyn Opondo, Africa Regional Director for the International Center for Research on Women, about how many African women have a legal right to an abortion but don't know it.
There are a number of countries and a number of issues where we have laws, but the implementation is falling short. And one of the reasons is simply because awareness has not been created. And so women do not know that they have the rights and can activate, demand those rights. I think the other reason, particularly when it comes to abortion, is the stigma that still persists. And stigma is at different levels, whether it's in the facility, at home, in the community, with the law enforcement. And so those who are charged with the responsibility of implementing those laws may not implement them because of stigma. So, for example, the Ministry of Health may not go out of their way. But also women may not demand those rights because of stigma.
And yet there's this Maputo Protocol, which is a human rights treaty, you know, that pretty much guarantees their rights. Tell me what is in the protocol and how it's being enforced, if at all.
We have the Maputo Protocol, which is a treaty of the African Union that is a protocol on women's rights. It talks about women, the protection of the rights of women. And in there, Article 14.2c, it talks about women having abortion rights in cases of rape, in cases of fetal malformation. It talks about rape in case of sexual assault, in cases of incest or health and endangerment to the mother or the fetus. Now, a number of countries have adopted this particular article of the Maputo Protocol, and some have gone ahead and domesticated it, such as DRC, such as Rwanda, wholesomely. Yes.
That's a pretty big deal, because I don't know of any other place in the world where there's this treaty that covers the entire continent like that, right?
It's a first of its kind.
That's Evelyn Opondo, Africa Regional Director for the International Center for Research on Women. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Nairobi. And that's all we have for you this Wednesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Genesis the Veteran and the song Sambala Sambala. I'm your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius Tanner, Thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.